Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, Rod, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Rachel, and Morena to you too.
It's nice to have you up on the breakfast show again this morning, talking politics, as we always do. We're going to start with chatting a bit about the government's clean vehicle incentive plan, because it's a bit of a hot topic at the moment. So it's basically a proposition by the government that some car imports will be made more expensive depending on how much CO2 they emit. So high emitters will be taxed more, basically, and electric cars will be made cheaper. So what can you tell us about this? What's the sort of general way people have responded to this?
By and large, it's been positive. The motor industry is certainly being supportive of it overall. But that the most clear on that have been the producers of and sellers of new cars rather than the importers of used cars. So I think we might see a bit more of a pushback from that latter sector in due course. Unfortunately, though, there is a fair amount of things going around which are just plain wrong. And one of them is that somehow this seriously penalizes the rural sector because they won't still pick up their utes or they'll have to pay more for their utes. And that's fundamentally wrong because the way this works is that the financial incentives are both on the demand side, i.e. trying to persuade people to buy more fuel-efficient or even zero-emissions cars. But on the other side, there are some financial mechanisms to stimulate the supply side of that. For the first time, we're getting fuel efficiency standards. There are only three other developed countries which don't have them, two others besides us, and those are Australia and Russia. There's been real pressure on those companies with fines if they fail to meet those targets to improve the fuel efficiency of utes and the like. So there will still be twin cab utes out there, but over the coming years there's real incentive to make them more fuel efficient, and that benefits actually those rural consumers. So that's an example of how. Although there are some complexities in this system, it's taking people a while to get their head around some of those sorts of issues.
Well, fairly unsurprisingly, National's been quite critical of this plan as well. And they're saying that it's going to impact, well, Paula Bennett specifically has said that it's going to impact people who can't afford another cost. I guess, like, is there much truth to that? Is that going to affect people who can't afford, I guess, to be paying this sort of extra fee?
She just has not got her head around this at all. That is completely wrong. Of the top 10 models of cars that lower-income families buy, seven of them would benefit from the discounts in this system because low-income people, many of them, are already making good decisions about what vehicles they buy based on how much they cost to run. So they're tending towards already buying more fuel-efficient cars and therefore their benefit. The second thing is that these fees on high-emitting cars and discounts on low-emission or EVs only apply to the first time the car is registered in New Zealand, either as a new or a used car. And so there isn't an ongoing penalty if you are buying a car in the second-hand market thereafter. And that's where most of those lower-income households are buying their cars. They're not very. I would be very surprised if any of them are buying a brand new car coming into the country, and not many of them are buying newly imported used cars. But meanwhile, these mechanisms will bring more fuel-efficient cars into the country, which will then get into the used car market, which will then benefit those families in due course. So Bennett's completely wrong on that.
It's a tricky one in the sense that, as you're saying, there is quite a bit of misinformation or just kind of misunderstanding, I guess, around the topic. But ultimately, it's going to be an interesting thing to see how this affects the way I guess, road users are able to get their hands on more sort of fuel efficient cars and make things like electric vehicles more accessible too, hopefully in the long run as well. We might talk a little bit as well about a topic that you wanted to chat a bit about, which is the kind of business gloominess, I think is the way you phrased it, of the way that businesses are sort of, I guess, approaching the government or viewing the government at the moment. Could you talk a little bit about what you mean by that?
I'll start with a very, very big picture. GDP growth in the world is slowing down. It's very late in the cycle, the economic cycle, and therefore running out of a bit of steam in some countries. But of course, on top of that, you've got the trade wars that Donald Trump has initiated and all the uncertainty with his presidency overall and all those sorts of issues. But coming back to New Zealand, our economic growth rate is still the third highest in the OECD after the United States and Ireland. There is some longer term signs of a bit of a slowdown here. But I think that if businesses are more gloomy than that, those facts, those forecasts justify, is a bit of a worry. But then when you look at the sort of responses there are to policy proposals from the government, a very good example is the labour market reforms. And this is based on the working group that Jim Bolger led and reported on 6 months ago, unveiling the Fair Pay Agreements Working Group report. But nothing has happened in the government on the last 6 months. We're still waiting for a response from them. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this is pushing the timetable for this any changes out into an election year. So there's been a couple of reports out in response to the Fair Pay Agreement, one from unions reinforcing the messages there, and just out one from the New Zealand Initiative, which is the successor to the Business Roundtable in part, so a very conservative grouping, being very critical of the ideas in the Fair Pay Agreement working group. And my sense is that business is sort of smelling blood a bit, because in with the government having parked all the tax reforms, sorry, let me rephrase that, having parked the capital gains part of the tax yet to decide what to do with the rest of that package, I think business is hoping that they can push the government on this to park another big piece of policy.
Right.
And then another example was on infrastructure, a report from the Prime Minister's Business Advisory Council, outgoing chair of that being Christopher Luxon, who's now showing all sorts of interest in going into politics post in New Zealand. And that's calling for the government to reactivate 12 major road projects, which were substantially scoped by the previous government. Because they're arguing that those road projects are really necessary. The government's response to that is those 12 projects are $12 billion of spending with a very poor economic benefit value attached to those projects. That money would be better spent in other forms of transport or indeed some other roading projects. So that's the sort of push and pull that's going on between business.
All right, lots going on there. Well, thank you so much, Rod, for chatting to us this morning, and we'll speak to you again in the future shortly.
Oh, thanks so much, Rachel. See ya.
Thank you. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.